What if this isn't a climate crisis, but the greatest opportunity humanity has had in a long time? Lean Into Clean will explore and discuss with highly esteemed guests on what could be the new spirals for society, sustainability, spirituality, and social harmony. Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. I hope you are having a lovely, wonderful spring day. It's the start to the week. I've got a wonderful guest for you today. How many of you at home have got pets? How many of you have got dogs and cats and animals in the home? And how many of you would love to find out how more connected you could be with these animals? So that's a little clue about today's guest. I'm going to tell you a bit about that shortly. But first, we'll begin with a news item. As you know, my company, mygreenpod.com, brings news in the sustainability and the ethical consumer arena every single day on our platform at mygreenpod.com. My wife Kate is the editor, so she's out researching and finding out what's going on so she can talk about it. But today's news I thought was actually quite interesting. It's not exactly tied into today's guest, but there is definitely a link. So the headline is Homes for Birds and Bats. It says dozens of bird and bat boxes installed at 9 TransPennine Express stations to provide new habitats for wildlife. I love this story. So a total of 50 bird and bat boxes have been installed at 9 TransPennine Express, that's the TPE stations, to provide additional habitats for native wildlife. The boxes have been installed on buildings, walls and trees at Yarm, North Allerton, Thirsk, Hull, Cleethorpes, Grimsby Town, Barnetby, Scunthorpe and Stalybridge stations. They are part of the TBE's plans to grow biodiversity at its train stations, which is lovely. There's a bit about sustainable tourism. So different types of boxes have been used to encourage various species, including a variety of, and I love this, bat species, as well as birds such as robins, blackbirds, wrens, wagtails, swallows and swifts. So last year, the train operator carried out several improvements across its stations to benefit wildlife, including pollinator-friendly station planter upgrades, bug hotels, and a significant landscape planting scheme at Thirst. TPE's broader goal is to lead and enable sustainable tourism and transport across the north of England and into Scotland. It goes on to say, and I've nearly finished, I promise. This is a quote from Steve Gilder. He's the environment delivery lead at the TPE. He says, "We are committed to building a more sustainable railway, and this is just one of the many projects, our stations across the TPE network that focus on biodiversity. With a lack of natural habitat space across many of our stations, bird and bat boxes are a simple way to provide additional places for them, and we look forward to monitoring their use over the coming months. We're planning to install more bat and bird boxes, and in the future, along with several other exciting biodiversity improvements as part of our plan to create spaces that are good for nature across our network." What a lovely bit of news. Thank you to Steve Gilder and thank you to the TPE. And if any of you guys are out traveling on the TPE's networks, have a look out for those bat boxes. If you can take pictures and if you see any birds or bats flying in and out of them, do let us know. You know how to get in contact with us at UK Health Radio. Just mark it for my attention. I'd love to hear any feedback from you guys. So look, this brings me nicely onto today's guest. See if you can See if you can work out the link. So today we have actually a remarkable individual. He's a veterinarian, a molecular sorry, a molecular biologist. I couldn't get my words out then. We have today Dr. Jeff. He with a profound connection actually to Eckhart Tolle's teachings on presence and awakening. Dr. Jeff offers a fresh and insightful perspective on animal welfare and human consciousness, making him an ideal guest for today's show. Welcome, Dr. Jeff. Nice to join us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It is an honor, and I'm very, very grateful to get to talk about this topic because it's so important.
Yeah, it is an important topic. We just to let you know, we have a gorgeous cat at home, was a rescue cat. We have a lovely relationship with her. I would love to find out more about how I can bond and, look out for any illnesses that might be imminent. I definitely get a sense that we kind of, we feel when she wants more love and she might be feeling a bit distant from the family. So I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation, and I know our listeners will be as well. Dr. Jeff, just tell me a little bit about yourself, first of all, because although you're a vet and although you're a biologist, just give me a bit of insight to your world. Who are you and what would people say about you, those that are close to you?
I'm not sure I sh can share what people. A bit about me is since 1975, I've been a patient myself in the medical merry-go-round with mystery disease that the symptoms started in 25, and I was diagnosed in 2010. So for 35 years, I had a mystery disease. Most of my life has been shaped by my trying to deal with those symptoms of the mystery disease, discovering, science and magic were my passions as a child, and discovering the interconnection between those two as I developed in as a veterinarian. Can began my career as a molecular biologist studying the individuality of cells, how cells respond to their environment. I certainly did not know in the 80s that I would be studying that right now for dogs and cats, because I've always wanted to be a veterinarian. And the way I've dealt with my mystery disease and symptoms is directly related to your bird and bat boxes.
Ah, tell us more, tell us more.
Well, the bird and bat boxes are a fabulous example of how all life is interconnected. And that interconnection is the invisible energetic spirit all around us. And that energetic spirit, which we embody as living our pets, is also the energy that allows their bodies and our bodies and all living bodies to flow and operate at their best. And when they do that, they sustainably conserve energy. So I would posit that doing just the opposite is why we're in the situation that we're in the world, and why our pets are living shorter lives and getting sicker at younger ages. So the more we can flow, the more we can love, the more that we can be connected with that energetic, invisible spirit all around us, the healthier that we will be. And it's embodied by the bird box story, because bird boxes, environmental consideration for everything is really the basis for what we're talking about, is the connection of us all.
I love the way you've I love the way you've set the stage, and I know our listeners will be as well. I mean, I'm completely with you that we've essentially lost our connection with the natural world because we feel we are separate from it in order Really, that kind of was set up in order for us to be able to commoditize the natural world and make money and profits from it. We know that's failing us, that system, Dr. Jeff. So thank you for setting that up nicely. I do want to talk to you more deeply about the energy side. Maybe not yet, but I'm a Reiki master, so I really understand chi. I really understand cosmic energy. And I have a practice every morning, which includes a kriya, so a bit of meditation and some omming and some reconnecting with spirit, with that spiritual force that's around us. But let me just ask you, why is it so such a crude, such a obvious disconnect that we have with this energetic paradigm right now? What's happened? Was it all part of the plan, in your opinion, that we needed to remove ourselves so mysteriously from it in order to come back to some kind of equilibrium, some kind of unity? Or what's going on from your perspective?
Oh, I think that's a very, very important thing you just said. And yeah, the challenges that we are now experiencing as a result of not following that paradigm are indeed helping us to awaken. And one of the things that our animals can do is they can be our, as Eckhart calls them, our guardians of being. So we are human beings. But we do instead of being. But our
Yes.
animals help us. The animals and nature and the breath and meditation and prayer help us come back to the connection, the being connection, just let it be.
I love that. I mean, I often use that Gandhian phrase, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. I'm often challenging my family and friends, and my cat's decided to come and join us, Dr. Jeff. So she clearly feels an infinity and connection with you, which is lovely. But yeah, I mean that's the problem, isn't it? That we have become addicted to what I describe as the outside world, the experience we have when we have our eyes open and therefore in doing mode. And actually, there is the counterbalance to that, which is the inner sense of being, the stillness, the opposite, if you like, from all the doing. So thank you for bringing that to our attention and reminding us. So what was your wake up moment? Why have you gone from, you know, I guess a rather, I guess, you know, educational structure. I mean, it's 6 or 7 or possibly even 9 years to become a vet, in depending on what country you're in. You know, you would have clearly been learning about the pharmaceutical industries, these dominant industries that don't seem to care about getting people well. They care more about selling product to an ill society. I know that's a bit of a judgment, so please excuse me on that. But what was your wake-up call? And how did you kind of transition from what's perhaps maybe described as an old paradigm medical system into this holistic One Health system? Bit of a long question, I'm sorry.
No, it's a great question. I appreciate it, but it's a long, long answer that spans decades. So unfortunately, there was no one example, one instance. There were a few, what I would call mini awakenings, where I began to realize, the greater connections between us all. And I guess I need to go back to the 80s and 90s when I was strictly a conventional vet, so I had no concept of any of these things that we're talking about because they're not taught in vet school. This is not part of the mechanistic, reductionistic, materialistic paradigm that we are trained in. And that disconnect, to answer your long ago question, that disconnect started in the 1800s when we began to realize that, we can dissect a body and look at the different parts, and this part must be important for this, and that's what we've done and just done and done and done. So now we're actually identifying molecular mechanisms in the body. We know exactly what molecules are being released. And we are able to intervene or work against the mechanisms that they are designed to help us with. And those mechanisms are all inflammatory mechanisms. So we'd love to at some point talk about, inflammation. But going back to where we got Wei-Li, it was just I've thought about this for many years, and I think the only real big answer is what you said. We have to be able to monetize it. And as we began to get better at monetizing it, we got better at the research. We got better at the disconnection. We got more and more disconnected from the world, from the environment. Just going to go way back to the beginning of the One Health paradigm, which started during a typhoid epidemic, when a couple of eminent scientists, Virchow and Osler, identified that we can solve this pandemic with spreading out the people with more green spaces by environmental engineering. And fast forward to through the 1800s to 2020. Here that helped us see more clearly that maybe the opposite of what Virchow and Osler were talking about, maybe the opposite of the One Health paradigm, which is the paradigm of mechanistic and materialistic and reductionistic economic gain from wellness, which isn't wellness, but rather is the absence of disease. And the absence of disease is not the same as the freedom and flexibility of being well. So I guess there's a bunch of different answers to your question.
Yeah, and I appreciate it is a big question, but it's nice to hear your perspective and actually your wisdom and and reason for kind of doing what you do. Let's just do you mind? I mean, have you got to the bottom of your mystery illness? Because I know I kind of just kind of scaped over that, but have you understood it now? Is it less of a mystery?
Yes, actually, I got my diagnosis in 2010 at Columbia University. A brilliant neurologist did some unheard of. He put the pieces together. He said, "This is what this and this and this and this fit together," and diagnosed me with something called spinocerebral ataxia, which is one of the ataxias, which is related to a defective part of the brain called the cerebellum that doesn't work properly, and it just so happens that it creates a lot of different symptoms in the body. But that weird connection in my brain may be part of what's allowing me to see the disconnection all around us.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like in some ways it's a blessing and perhaps I don't know if curse is the right word, but you know that saying, a blessing and a curse. So I just certainly don't want to put that upon you. Thank you for that. I think this is a very good opportunity, Dr. Jeff, for us to go to a commercial break. Anybody out there that's listening, please do stay with us because we're going to come back to Dr. Jeff and he is going to unpack this One Health system that he's very cleverly and carefully working with. And also unpick some of the interrelationships that we have with our pets and how we can build upon those relationships. So stay with us. We shall be back shortly after this commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio on our show Lean Into Clean. I'm here with Dr. Jeff, who's a veterinarian and a molecular biologist. I was really fascinated, Dr. Jeff. The bit about, the training at Eckhart Tolle's School of Awakening. Tell us a little bit about that, because I'm sure many of our listeners will be familiar with Eckhart Tolle's work. I certainly am, but just tell us about your experience.
I had been listening to and working with that card for a number of years, and what he calls the perennial philosophy, or what Marianne Williamson calls the universal curriculum, is related to consciousness and presence and, the ability of us all to awaken and see the world all around us as it really is, when we're both on this planet and when we're not. And that is founded back in the energy question that we talked about before, that energetic spirit that never leaves the earth or never leaves the world, the universe. And in 2003, I'm sorry, 2023. I realized that because of the similarities of our approaches to the world and the connection, the interconnection of it all, that I could learn a lot more through a school of awakening. And indeed, he helped me see, the reality of everything around me. And at the same time, I was taking, and it's very coincidental, that at the same time I was in a conference for intuitive and interspecies communication. And that combination of his school of awakening and IIC, which others call animal communication, that combination helped me awaken to the realization that life all around us is so interconnected through universal consciousness that the IIC, or the animal communication that we made fun of in vet school and as scientists, that actually is the connection, the demonstration of the connection between us and our animals. And that is one way to deepen the bond, to be able to start to communicate with our animals. And actually, the paradigm that we teach now is using all of the world around us, nature, our animals, and their symptoms, their diseases, their health challenges, all of the challenges all around us. Taking that and using it to awaken our consciousness to the reality of the interconnectedness that can be used to drive our health, and that is being used to drive our wellness, our health, and our animals' health. And Eckhart describes this beautifully in the terms of consciousness, in the terms of the perennial philosophy. So always talking about, awakening through our animals, through presence, through the being that they can bring us, animals, the nature, the breath, to all the things that help bring us back into the present moment.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. So give us some examples of your experiences with connecting with and being in relationship with animals, how they communicate with you. And then maybe off the back of that, you could share some examples of how some of our listeners could use those tools in order to strengthen the relationships with their animals, which I know absolutely we all would love to do.
And that is the bottom line. That relationship between us and our animals, that bond is so important to their behavior, their physical being, and to ourselves, our blood pressures. And we know our blood pressure and cholesterol and our wellness overall is related to our relationship with our animals. And I guess I would like to start this the conversation with science. I mean, we don't necessarily talk about vitality and balance, and energetic stuff in the body, but it really does start in the body. In every cell of the body, there are little sustainable powerhouses called mitochondria Those mitochondria are the generators for all the energy in the body. We are alive. Our pets are alive because of mitochondrial energy. If there is none, there's no life. So there's a lot in between being alive and being dead, and that's where the physiologic paradigm can help support the body while it heals. But the energetic body is fundamental, is the root of everything. All of the physiologic things that we see are energy related. But back to communication. So the first way we can communicate with our animals by realizing that their symptoms, their physical symptoms, are a reflection of the energy flow in their bodies. So our animals, the observation of our animals are like a marker, or what we call in science a biomarker, of their internal energy flow. And by fine-tuning their energy flow, we learn to bond closer with them. We can fine-tune their energy flow by observing symptoms, but also through something called BEAM, which is a acronym that stands for behavior, energy, appetite, and mood. Those are the four factors that we can observe that are reflective of what's going on in our animals. As we do things that raise their beam, we're also connecting more deeply with them. So, eat, play, and love are what drive most of our pets. Some may be a special treat, maybe playing fetch, it may be petting your kitty while, to stimulate purring, which we know is healing to the cat and to us by stimulation of the parasympathetic reflex. And that's the beauty of it all. Where we are right now is science and spirituality are coming together, and we know that the mitochondria and petting and purring and playing are all going to help sustain our health. And by sustaining our health, I mean at the lowest energy requirement possible. Because by focusing on energy consumption, by focusing on sustainability in the body, that is that new paradigm, or what Eckhart calls the new earth. He's got a program coming up in May, I believe it is, where he's going to bring all of his work together, describing his new earth paradigm, and it jibes beautifully, Jarvis, with what we're talking about today. And I would urge you to go look into that further.
I absolutely will do. I am a strong advocate for what I describe as the new paradigm or the new earth. As part of my practice in the morning, I always realign my energy with that of the new paradigm, whatever the new paradigm is, and commit to being there and inviting people to come and join me there rather than me lowering my vibration back into the old paradigm, the fear-based paradigm. So thank you for the reminder of that. I would definitely look into Eckhart Tolle's New Earth series, whatever, however that kind of shows up. Thank you for that information. And I guess a lot of our readers will be very interested, listeners will be very interested in that as well. Thank you. Tell us some of the things that we need to look out for with our pets, that are signs that things are not flowing.
Thank you for asking, because that goes back to BEAM. BEAM is what you start tracking every day. We strongly recommend keeping a journal, and in that journal, keeping a BEAM score from 1 to 10. So where's your animal's BEAM score that day? Their behavior, energy, appetite, and mood. Where would you put it on that scale? Where 10 out of 10, it's 100%. It's as good as they could be. So, I mean, is a 15-year-old dog the same energy as a 1-year-old or 2-year-old? No, But they can still be a 10 because they're as good as they were when they were maybe 14. When you track gradual declines, then you realize that something may be going on energetically. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, if you go to the vet at that point where you know something is off because the beam is lowering, but the vet may not be able to find anything wrong, and they may say your animal is fine, but you know they're not because you know your animal better than anyone else in the world. And I promise, promise, promise that if you address the energetic part of the dis-ease that the veterinarian is not able to address because they're only looking at the physiological stuff, the test results, the exam results. But if you address the energetic, whether it's with Reiki or Ayurveda or homeopathy or TCM, you will see an improvement in beam. I mean, that is the basis of the paradigm that we teach at Holistic Actions. And our goal is to get this paradigm into vet schools, back into vet schools. I mean, back in the 1800s, all of the MDs, or a large percentage of the MDs, were becoming energetic practitioners. They were becoming homeopaths. Even though nowadays homeopathy is considered to be a pseudoscience, it's also the most scientific way to energetically upgrade the body. And that is what I recommend that you do if you're a pet parent that knows something's off. You go to the vet and they say, oh no, come back in 6 months. Maybe we'll be able to find something at that point. Consult with a veterinary homeopath. And even if you don't do that, you can stimulate the same vital force healing, the same flow in the body. You can stimulate that by getting them outside, by doing a therapeutic sniff walk with your pet, by using the happiness protocol. There are lots and lots of ways that you can upgrade. But going back to your question, that starts with the beam. You can know that your animals are out of balance internally by learning that many of the common symptoms that we call normal, a little bit of eye discharge, a little red ear, cats that vomit hairballs, cats that drink lots of water. We call those normal symptoms, but in this paradigm, those are common but not normal. And those common things are clues, along with beam, that show that there needs to be an energetic fine-tuning. And that fine-tuning is how we actually can achieve wellness, flow, and ultimate sustainability.
Nice. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you. That was really informative. Now, as you know, Dr. Jeff, I ask all my guests to come to the show with a couple of songs that are either soundtracks to their life's work or songs that mean a lot to them. I know you've brought two crackers. We're going to play your first song. Do you want to just let everybody know what song you've chosen? Don't tell me why you chose it. But do tell us what the song is. And once we've played it, we'll go to a commercial break. And then after the break, you can come back and tell me why you chose that song. So, what's your first song?
Well, poor chaps from Liverpool decided that it's all about letting it be. And the first song is Let It Be.
Let It Be by the Beatles. Here we go, an absolute classic. As I said, we'll play the song. We'll go to a commercial break. We'll be back we're back with Dr. Jeff shortly. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. We're having a fascinating conversation today with Dr. Jeff. Just to recap on a couple of things, if you've just happened to tune in, we're talking about the happiness of our pets and creating a relationship so that they can have an illness-free life. There's an approach called BEAM, which is a behavior, energy, appetite, and mood system. They operate as key indicators for the animal, well-being. So we could early disease, assessments or detection, things like that. What I really love about this is that we can create relationships in listening to what our animals are trying to tell us through their symptoms. So not just to solve problems, but to understand their experiences and needs. I'm loving this because I've got a really nice relationship with my lovely cat, Ponyo, and I hope that we can build on that even more. Accepting that symptoms, or these symptoms, should I say, and the messages that our pets convey without fear, and recognizing them as opportunities to enhance the animal's quality of life. We all want that, right? And also trusting the natural process and our own kind of insights to provide care that supports balance and health. So, Dr. Jeff, thank you very much for these insights. You've really kind of opened up, for want of a better term, the pathways of discovery for everybody. What I see it as, actually, it's an evolution in consciousness. It's an evolution in understanding the health and well-being system. Luckily, I've had lots of training in this. I mean, I did Reiki. I'm trained with a female shaman for 15 years about the intelligence of our elements, if you like. But what you're doing is bringing this into a mainstream kind of sector. And not only is it mainstream, it's actually fundamentally important, because I think the statistics are that nearly one in four people, or what possibly one in even 50%, have pets at home. So it's a huge statistic. I will tell you, Dr. Jeff, we are all vegan in our house, from my four-year-old to my me being the eldest. So and my kids have been brought up as vegan, so we are very, very supportive of loving and caring for animals. Let's just talk a little bit about very practical stuff, like what are the foods that we should absolutely not be giving to our pets? What should we be avoiding?
May I ask you say one thing first?
Please, please do, yeah.
You have this amazing way of summarizing succinctly and clearly stating things, and I'm running around and disconnected and just trying my answers to are my answers too long, Jarvis? Would you prefer I could answer in one or two words, if that would be better?
No, your answers are fantastic. I love the way you dance with the energy of spoken words. So no. This is about you and you sharing your life's work with our listeners, who will absolutely care what you're saying. So no. You please use this time and as many words and dances as you like.
All right, sir. I appreciate that. Oh, my goodness. So my answer would be three words.
Yeah.
I actually could answer the diet question, food question, with three words. And
well,
do that,
and then we'll move on to some perhaps more stimulating questions. Yeah.
Now we can start there, because the food question, as you raised with veganism, is so important. But in short, everybody, and this goes especially for kitty cats, food that you feed should be fresh, should be varied,
yep,
and in moderation. That's okay. It. If you follow those guidelines, you know enough to feed your pets. So fresh. Right. Rules out all ultra-processed, dried, and canned foods.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you feed raw. It doesn't matter if you feed recipes. It's fresh food. It's real food. It's human food. It's the food that we are, in the U.S., called table scraps.
Yeah.
We're given a bad name, but in reality, is the food that we and our animals should be eating, and that is the fresh food. However, if you're going to feed fresh, either need to have a balanced diet if you can feed the same thing every day, as a lot of pet parents prefer, or the better option is to vary the diet the way we vary ours. We don't balance our diet every day because we eat a wide variety of fruits, vegetables, nuts, meats, whatever. And the balance comes with that variety if you're eating good fresh food and variety.
Brilliant.
So same thing with our pets. If it's good for us, it's good for them. There are a few exceptions, and this brings us from sustainability into susceptibility. Some animals are very susceptible to different foods, things like chocolate. Chocolate is a toxin for most pets at a high enough dose, but some pets will react because they're susceptible to getting sick. Will react to a little bit, so maybe avoid chocolate altogether. And the same goes for grapes and raisins. For some reason, some animals are able to live on vineyards and eat grapes out the wazoo, and others eat one or two grapes or raisins and they get kidney failure. So it's not worth the risk because we don't know. So that susceptibility question brings me back to bonding, because susceptibility is directly related to those early warning signs that you, as a conscious pet parent, observe in your pets. A little bit of eye discharge, that little bit of pickiness, that cat vomits hairballs. Those are also signs of susceptibility, or what I would call an SOS. Our pets are giving us that we need to help save them because they're out of balance. And our food is a great way to do that. There are a lot of pets eating commercial pet food, and they're out of balance, and they're giving us clues like, well, I can't tolerate a changed diet. You always have to feed me the same food day in, day out. That's a sign that the microbiome may not be well balanced, that there is no balance overall. By addressing that energetic balance, and we can talk if you want in different ways of doing that. The normal pet, not the common pet, but the normal pet is able to eat a different food every day, if not every meal, the same way that we do.
There's been a big movement over the last. I remember when I was a kid, it was like, you must get your five a day. It was about fruit and veg. But now, the narrative has moved on completely. Just for 50 odd years later, there's a big thing going around at the moment that it's certainly if you can have 30 different types of plants a week in your meals, then that is a really good combination, which is why societies in places like India and China and places like that have a much healthier society than America or or the UK, partly because of that variation in just in spices and things like that. So no, thank you for that. I love the variation. What's your take on and perspectives on pet vaccinations, pet care and health, things like that, these kind of things that we're asked to subscribe to.
That is a great, great question, and goes directly back to the susceptibility question, because the more susceptible they are, there are individuals that are so susceptible that you give them one drug, one vaccine, one anything that their bodies can't tolerate, and they get sick. So in my mind, we need to manage that susceptibility before we worry about everything else, because pet susceptibility is decreased, which is the opposite, which means basically that resilience is improved by working with the body. The more we work against the body, the higher the susceptibility, the lower the resilience. And at the same time, the more energy we're using, the more energy that we use by working against the world, against the body, against life, the more energy that we use, the less sustainable and the more susceptible that our pets become. We become to Lyme disease, to epidemics, to bacteria. And normal bacteria are on our skin, all over our bodies, all the time. But if we're ultra susceptible, those same bacteria can make us sick.
Thank you.
But we don't want to treat the bacteria. We don't want to manage or worry about the bacteria, but rather, let's work on the susceptibility.
No, brilliant. Dr. Jeff, it's such a shame, but this show, the time just absolutely flies by. We are coming into the last 8 minutes. I do want to get your second song in, because I think it would be really important to play it. What we'll do after the song is... Oh, by the way, I didn't ask you why you chose Let It Be, but I think it's pretty obvious why you chose that song. So let's not even go there. But I do want to get your second song in. And then you asked me to come back to you on a question about inflammation. So shall we play your second song? And you can tell me why you chose it. And then you've got a couple of minutes there to tell me whatever you think is the most important thing for Dr. Jeff to share with our listeners, whether it be inflammation or not inflammation. It doesn't actually matter, but it will be your moment. And I promise you, our listeners will take it on board. So it's going to be very, very important. So what's your second song?
Oh, it is one of the songs of the Hanuman Chalisa by Krishna Das.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Welcome back. That was a beautiful song. I loved it. Being half Indian, I do listen to a lot of Indian music and chants and prayers. So tell me a bit about that, Jeff. Dr. Jeff, should I say.
Jeff is great.
Good.
And Hanuman Chalisa is a prayer, but I chose it because Hanuman, Samuel Hanuman, is also the founder of this energetic paradigm that we've been talking about.
Ah, really? The
and,
monkey god.
And
the monkey god,
just, that just emphasizes the connection, which is, Hanuman, both Hanumans were in service the world, in service for Ram, in service for humanity. Samuel Hanuman basically is the only doctor that has a monument in Washington, D.C. for all the lives that he saved using this paradigm, this energetic paradigm of homeopathy that we're talking about today, because everything we're talking about is homeopathy, and that is... I guess that would be my last word, is that you can use the energetic power of homeopathy, of love, of prayer, of spirit, all combined for the wellness that will connect us, our pets, and the world all around us in a new world.
Absolutely beautiful. And I love the fact that you've said that, because my understanding of homeopathy, and incidentally, it's the only treatment I've used in the last 35 years for my kids and for us, it's about energy. It deals with things at an energy level. So you've brought us very nicely full circle back to that energy connection. Dr. Jeff, you have been not only profoundly wise, you've been such a lovely guest. I'm very, very honored to have had you on our show. I know you've woken up at some ungodly hour being based in America. Thank you very much. How do people find you? Because I definitely know that our listeners are going to want to get to know more about your work. How do people find you?
Thank you for asking. The very best way is holisticactions.com, which is where we teach beginning of this paradigm. I said beginning because there's a free course that you can take there that gives you the basis of what we call vitality and balance building in ourselves and in the world.
Beautiful. Holisticactions.com. Go and find out more about Dr. Jeff. Support his work. If you're in the industry, go and find out more. Let's get this movement so we can get back to the natural ways, the more sacred ways, those indigenous connections. Remember, people, we are all indigenous to planet Earth. The problem is we've lost our indigenous intelligence. So the wisdom keepers that are around today are holding that intelligence. Dr. Jeff is most certainly one of those wisdom keepers. We love you. Thank you very much for joining us on UK Health Radio.